For someone whose first language is telepathy, verbal communication can be very crude and limiting as well. Jess Kerrison, author of A Mind Beyond Words, not only helped give a voice to her telepathic autistic student, but in writing their story is giving a stronger voice to the extrasensory experience, something we all share and can strengthen together. I'm Robin with Tributaries. Early on in your book, A Mind Beyond Words, you tell the story of how your classroom shifted once your new student, Asher, joined the class. Tell us what happened and why he lit up when you talked to him about it, and how did he initially communicate with you if he wasn't verbal?
He wasn't entirely nonverbal. He had some speech. He sort of understood how speech worked, but he had a problem. I think it was called oral dyspraxia. It was problems with the muscles in his mouth. So as far as he was concerned, he was speaking totally normally, but other people found it really hard because he couldn't make a lot of speech sounds. So I found I'd been working in that classroom for several years, and after I'd had a child in the class for a few weeks, I kind of tuned into their way of speaking. So if they always used one sound instead of the one we'd use, I just compensated for that. So I started to be able to understand each of them, and they all had their own little ways of communicating. Asher was initially, just like all the other children in the class, he had a diagnosis on the autistic spectrum, which not all of them did, but he had this speech difficulty and he found conversations difficult, obviously, because he couldn't speak. What I found out later was that he was actually trying to communicate with people telepathically and they weren't picking it up. He couldn't figure out why. But I didn't find that out till a lot later on. So you asked me how initially he got his message across to me and how his face lit up when I started to understand. He was a very clever little boy. He was only six, but he was obviously very bright. And he started sabotaging my lessons, I think is a fair way to put it. I wasn't aware it was him initially. I just knew that things were going missing and the children weren't paying attention and something was a bit off. And so because he was the only new aspect to the class, if you like, the only thing that had changed since everything had been going all right, I started to watch him quite carefully. And I realized that he was the one that was masterminding all these little changes. And so I took him aside one day and asked him why he was playing mind games on me. He had no idea what mind games were, but when I explained all the little tricks he played, he got that. And although he'd been doing this whole thing without giving any indication that it was him, as soon as I said that, his face did light up and his eyes were absolutely shining. And in his little way, he said, "So it you? I thought it were you." And I said, "What's me?" And then he told me we did a deal. We did a deal and I was going to be his helper. And I got that much from him. And I said, "Well, when did we do this deal? Because I don't remember it." And he looked at me as if I was a complete idiot and said, "Before I were born," as if that was the most natural thing in the world.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. So new to you.
Very new to me. Yes. Yes. It was not something I'd ever experienced before. And he was basically telling me we had some sort of a soul contract, I suppose you'd describe it as, that we were going to work together, that he had clear memory of sorting this out with me, and he just had to find the right person. So he'd been doing these little tests of his, as he called them, on various adults that he came across throughout his life until he found the one who figured out what he was doing. And then he knew he'd found me.
Yeah. And then you knew your life was about to change, or perhaps you didn't initially.
I didn't realize quite how my life was about to change. I thought this was a very interesting experience, and I was definitely going to keep a close eye on this kid. But,
yes.
No, I can't say I knew what I was letting myself in for at that stage.
Well, bravo, and how beautiful, and perhaps because of the soul contract deep in your psyche somewhere, you were open to it, and you just brought so much expansion to initially Asher and yourself, of course, but now through the book, which you only felt comfortable writing. But anyway, it's just to finish that sentence, through the book, you're able to really bring a lot of light into a lot of subjects surrounding all of this, between teaching and communication, and boy, the way it leads into just so much compassion is so brilliant. And you write about it, I believe it was something like this, you said about winning the lottery, but not being able to spend any of the money because it took a while before you really were able to go public with this information.
Yes, that's very true. I was advised, in fact, by a channeled group of guides years and years ago when Asher was still in his teens. And they said, you're going to write a book about your experiences because this is cutting edge stuff and you need to get it out there. And so I mentioned this to Asher, who was a fairly recalcitrant 16-year-old, and he said, I forbid you to write my life story. So for a long time, that was that. But it was much later on in his life, in fact, when he was probably reaching about the age of late 20s, early 30s, he did get through to me telepathically. We did find that we could communicate with each other in that way. And at that point, he said, we do need to get the story out there, and I'll send things to you in thoughts. You can turn them into words, and we'll send it out because I think it's important that people, other people who've perhaps got autism or have difficulty speaking or are non-speakers, they still have messages, and they just need to find that one person in their life who can pick up their telepathic messages and bring them through.
Yes. Now, what nonverbal types of communication skills did you learn or become aware of from teaching Asher and the other speech impeded students? And just please correct me or excuse me if I use an incorrect term when speaking about someone who has difficulty speaking or is autistic.
The terms change all the time. I think people prefer non-speaking to non-verbal because non-verbal implies they can't make any sound, and obviously people can make sounds. But yeah, is that what you were wondering? So, right, what was your question?
About the non-verbal, okay.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Non-communicative types of communication skills that you learned or became aware of from teaching Asher and other autistic students.
Well, in that initial class that he was in, I had 10 children and they were aged between 5 and 7. They weren't all autistic by any means, but they did learn to speak to each other telepathically. And I gradually became aware that this was going on. I'd observed them playing together and it was obvious that they were communicating, but there were no words. And over a few months, I suppose, I found I was gradually able to start picking up, first of all, quite The sort of feeling like that feeling of being watched, you know, there's somebody behind you watching you and your back of your hairs on the back of your head stand up.
Yes.
It was that kind of thing at first. And when the children realised that I was picking them up to that degree, then they were actually extending their telepathic communication to me, not to any of the other members of staff, as far as I know. But I seem to be the lucky one. And there was one little chap in the class who I could actually hear his voice in my head. The only person I've ever had that with. With all the rest, it's just been silent and I've just known what they're thinking. But,
right. It's kind of interesting, isn't it, that when you're working or being around people or children that are not really using words, your listening gets deeper.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way to put it, Robin. I love that. Yes. Yes, it is. It's listening beneath the surface and going back to, I mean, I'm convinced that newborn babies, for example, have this ability, and I think it kind of gets worked out of them because everybody's so desperate to get them to talk.
Right.
Because that's a really important milestone in modern human development, isn't it? Getting the baby to say mama and dada and all those sounds that we can pretend are, you know, they're actually speaking to us.
I like how you put that. We can pretend.
Well, it is at first. I have children of my own, you know, and you hear them say, ma, 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 ma. You're always saying mommy.
Right, yes, of course, yes. So from the get-go, you say in order to avoid phrases like by a strange coincidence or as if by chance, Asher coined the realms. What does this mean to you and what is its relation to free will?
Yeah, there's quite a bit to unpick there. Asher did explain it to me. I'd never really understood whether life was destiny, if you like to put it that way, that things would happen to us because we were destined to do them, or whether we had free will. And both sort of seemed right, both seemed possible. But Asher put it, doesn't work so well for Americans, because you speak about, we call it SatNav, satellite navigation system, in cars, and you call it GPS?
Yes.
I believe.
Yes. Yes.
So we call it SatNav. It's the same thing. So it's that idea that your GPS, you can program it before you start your journey, which I suppose could be your life on this planet. And tell it, right, I want to experience this and I want to experience that and I want to go here and I want to go there. And the GPS is set in and it will take you where you want to go. But it won't tell you what to do when you get there. So I might decide in spirit that I want to have a life in which I experience illness, profound illnesses, or I might, because I've never done that before in my soul journey and that's something I'd like to explore, or I might decide I want to experience what it's like to become fabulously wealthy and quite how I'd handle that and what I'd do with it, how I'd use the money. So whatever we've decided in spirit we'd like to experience, we go ahead and add GPS, which Asher calls our SatNav, subtle light navigation, as opposed to satellite. He said we get there, and all the time the realms are this sort of extra dimension that we don't have, most of us don't have direct access to, but there is guidance coming from the realms, if you like, that's taking us to a situation. How we deal with that, though, is entirely free will. It's entirely down to us.
Yeah, I love the use of that analogy. Say the GPS or SAT tells you to go left and you turn right. It's not going to freak out at you. It's just going to say, okay, now turn right, just to get you back on track, right? So
yes. Yeah, that's exactly right. It will just recalibrate and you'll get that situation again. And I'm sure I speak as someone who's had a lifetime in teaching and watched a lot of families and the dynamics between them. You'd get, for example, a mother who got together with an abusive guy and she went through that relationship, had problems, finally got up the courage to ditch him, took up with another man who was also an abusive guy. And I just watch these people sort of do it over a spell of years and think, when is she going to learn her lesson? Mm. Because once we've got that lesson, we can move on to something that feels more positive. But we have to work out, no, I deserve better than this. This isn't, you know, the way my life was supposed to be. So, right. Yeah.
Well, just share a bit about your experience in becoming more and more telepathic.
I wouldn't say I'm wildly telepathic. I'm not the sort of person who can walk down the street and know what everybody's thinking, not by any means. But what I do seem to have is, as you were hinting earlier, this ability to be able to pick people up if, I think you used a phrase like going deeper than ordinary speech. So, for example, and this isn't in the book, but I've fairly recently met a non-speaking lady who has severe autism in that she can't communicate verbally at all. But I have managed to pick her up. I have managed to be able to understand what she's saying. And she tells me telepathically that's because of the work that I've done with Asher, and it's taken him, he's a very patient guy, it's taken him a long, long time, most of his life, to train me to believe that I'm getting the messages. That's the hard bit. And it was only when he was telling me things and I was thinking, oh, I could actually check that, I could actually find out whether that's true or not, say, the case I'm thinking of was somebody in his family who I hadn't had any contact with since he was a little boy. And I'd no idea what had happened to this person. I'd lost all track of them. And he told me what they were now doing as an adult. And I thought, oh, well, I could actually check that out and find it. So I went searching around on Facebook, feeling like an amateur sleuth until I found that this person was doing exactly what he'd said. And I thought, yeah, I should be accepting that I'm really getting these messages. And it's the belief that you can do it that is the key to the whole thing.
Yes, well, I'm sure it also brought so much more awareness into your communication using words. And as you communicated so silently with Asher, do the lines get blurred on who is speaking and who is listening?
Yes, they do indeed. Yeah. It's a very odd situation. Sometimes it's a clear taking turns. I record all our conversations in a notebook. I just sit in a quiet room and I have a notebook and a pen. And I write down anything I want to say, and then I wait for his answer to come. And it might come to me in words, or it might come to me in pictures, or it might come to me in a sort of movie. I'll see it in all different ways, and I'll record it. I'll keep a message of that. But there have been times when we're really, really both trying to discover the same thing, when I honestly, I'll say to him, look, I can't write this down as a, this is me speaking, this is you speaking. And he'll say, no, it's joined together. We've just merged into a collective mind, if you like. And those moments are magic.
Yeah. Yeah. But also in describing how you worked and how you lived in communication with these people, and now I'm sure with all people, experience of verbal communication really does hold so many things, and so many of the finer points become important, like volume and pitch and tone and expression and intention.
Yes, I mean, there's so much to communication generally, and I suppose this experience has just made me. I used to be a teacher of speech and language, after all, that was my basic work. So I already understood, that you had to teach children how to use intonation, how to use the right volume, and all of those things. But so I suppose I was very tuned into that, but there's all sorts of communication that takes place even without words, isn't there? Just in the way we look at each other, or the distance we sit from one another in a conversation, or what our body language is doing. It's a very complex thing.
Yes, and I can only imagine that your compassion in life and for life just, kind of went off the charts in some ways. Part of being in that place of winning the lottery and not being able to spend the money, but what you gained in compassion and could spend there, I feel must have just really been such a beautiful gift.
I feel very, very honored to have been chosen for this life purpose. Yes, I'm just so fortunate to have this opportunity and to be able to share Asha's words in a mind beyond words, or Asha's thoughts in a mind beyond words, so that others can pick them up.
Yes, and along with, the different categories that we want to put people in or children in when we're trying to work or teach them, and scientists measure state brain waves, for instance, alpha and the beta, etc. But as you write, it's like the shadows of consciousness, because what is non-local cannot be measured.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think there's so many scientists who still think that the mind is inside the brain. And Asher is very insistent, and I'm certain he's right. And there are a lot of other metaphysicians and thinkers these days who are in agreement with this, that the mind is something far greater than what's going on in the brain. The brain's got its very important uses, but Asha once said to me, when we communicate, I'm not using my brain at all. I mean, he has a physical body, but he's not using his brain, he's using his mind. And
Right.
he said, you're only using your brain in as much as you're writing it down in a book. And that does involve brain work. But he said, if you put the book aside and we just communicated in thought, you wouldn't be using your brain either. So
Right. That's
that's
why when I hear about them taking a dead brain off of a cadaver and cutting it open and seeing what they can find, I just kind of snicker a little bit and go, not going to find anything in there.
no. It's not there anymore. And it's the same with when they look at these alphas and betas and all the rest of it, and the brain state that they say there's nothing happening. What's it called? Theta, is it? I can't remember. The sort of the one where people are either in deep sleep or they're in a coma or something like that. But you only have to read accounts of near-death experiences or something like that to know that there's huge amounts going on
Yes,
in the
yes.
mind, but they're just not within the brain because the mind's moved out of the brain at that point.
Yes. And you made a promise to Asher's mom, who passed at a young age, while Asher, of course, was at a young age. And this promise was to help him develop the skills needed to function well in the world. And what was the main challenge for you, and what was the biggest piece that he needed to develop, do you think?
Well, there's almost like there's two Ashes. There's the physical him who is autistic, who has to cope with the sensory overload that autism gives people. He's now living in London, our capital city, which is a huge, bustling city. And he's holding down a job. It's not a hugely, challenging job, but for him it's extremely challenging because he's got to do all that. So I had to help him through secondary school when I was no longer his teacher. I had to help him to socialise with other people, to cope with just little things. He had a school teacher once who was probably a very good teacher, and she used to write the homework on the whiteboard every day at the end of the lesson and say, right, here's what I want you to do. And then while they were studiously copying down what she'd written, she started paraphrasing it and putting it in a different way. And Asha phoned me up in absolute hysterics, horrified, and said, I never know what to do for this teacher, because one minute she's telling me I've got to do what's on the board, and then she's saying something different. And I explained that she's actually trying to help the children in the class who don't do well visually but need to hear those things. And I said, you just copy down the stuff that's written on the board and ignore all the talking, and then you'll get stuff done and you'll get good marks.
Well, if that isn't a good lesson for life, ignore all the talking, I don't know what is.
Well, perhaps not in every case, but in its case, that helped. Yeah.
Well, Jess, I appreciated the final thoughts in your book, sharing that yours and Asher's experiences are true, but not meant to be offered as truth, as it would have negated everything. Beautifully said, yes.
Oh, bless you. Yeah, no, he was very insistent that we put that bit in. He doesn't want to be seen as a guru who's, you know, telling everybody what there is. And he has some quite nice little analogies, like he says the truth is like if you're sitting in a train and it's pouring with rain and the windows are all misted up and somebody uses their sleeve to look out at the truth outside, that's fine and they see it. It might be a bit blurry, but they can see the truth. But then if half an hour later another passenger wipes the steamed up window because it's all got steamed over again and looks out, they're seeing something quite different because the train's moved on, but they're still seeing the truth. So what he's saying is that the truth isn't a once and for all, you have to follow this route, otherwise you're completely wrong. There are many truths, and for each of us, it's a matter of finding our own truth.
Okay, note to self, more compassion, deeper listening. Many thanks to Jess Kirsten, author of A Mind Beyond Words. For anything related to tributaries, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Our podcasts are where you hope to find them, and if not, do let us know. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.